It's Let's Talk Legal on the Talk Station with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. Today we have just Cecil joining us with Harvell and Collins. And to remind you, the website is harvellandcollins.com. I mentioned the website real briefly as we open the program for a reason. It's a great way to sort of go deep into the firm, also understand all the services they offer, and I might add they also have all of these recordings there as well. But more importantly, it's an opportunity to get details so that when you give them a call, 252 area code 726-9050, 726-9050, you can go straight to the heart of the situation, give them the information they need, and they can find you answers. And with that, Cecil, good afternoon to you. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely, Lockwood. Good afternoon to you as well.
Well, you know, we've
I think the last couple of weeks, and you've had some additional questions, which are always, you just have, you are the question king, Lockwood.
Thank you.
concerning, you know, being an executor and how difficult sometimes that might become for certain folks. I mean, it really is true that the executor of an estate is called under many circumstances to kind of do the impossible. We are looking for the person in the family that has advanced to sainthood, if you will. it's sometimes just not the easiest job in the world. One of the questions you had, Lockwood, was, well, what in the world happens when the executor, who is many times also a beneficiary, but that the executor and maybe one or two of the beneficiaries do not agree on an issue. And, of course, that happens. And what we try to do under those circumstances, Lockwood, is, of course, like anyone, get to the bottom of the disagreement. What is the heart of the disagreement? And what, if anything, can we do to maybe potentially even come to a compromise? Do we need an appraisal? Do we need another appraisal because one of the parties disagrees with the initial appraisal? Do we bring in, you know, an accountant to render an opinion as to valuation? What, you know, we are going to have to, if we can, somewhat resolve the conflict. Now, resolving a conflict in an estate between beneficiaries, Lockwood, is very different than when the beneficiaries believe or are of the persuasion that their executor is violating the oath of office. We need to make a distinction here.
Okay.
That's a different kind of file. That's a file where the beneficiaries just do not believe that the executor is acting in good faith. That the executor potentially is exercising some self-dealing, which you cannot do when you are a fiduciary. You have to act on the benefit of the others and act reasonably. And so there are two types of questions here, Lockwood, that you brought to the table. One is, you know, well, what do you do, Cecil, when the executor is according to the beneficiaries acting outside the scope of his or her fiduciary capacity? The other question is, well, Cecil, what do you do when the parties just can't agree? It's not that anyone is acting outside their fiduciary obligation, but there's just an honest disagreement over over certain things. Sometimes that disagreement concerns the interpretation of the language in the will or in the trust. There is ambiguity, if you will, in the language, and the fiduciary is taking one position and the beneficiaries are taking a separate one. So I don't know which one you want to take first. Well, do you have a feeling?
Yeah, I do. I do. First off, I want to make note of something you said a few moments ago. Oath of office.
Yeah.
So an executor actually swears an oath to what, the clerk of court?
Correct.
Okay.
Who is, by the way, representing the superior court of the state of North Carolina.
Okay.
So the superior court is our highest court relative to relative to trial court. It is our trial court. We're not in district court. We're not in juvenile court. We're not in magistrate court. We are actually in superior court, which is our highest court relative to jurisdictional requirement, et cetera. And so the executor absolutely is making an oath to that court that I will faithfully and dutifully and in the sense of fiduciary responsibility, honor the terms of the will, gather the assets, and distribute the assets according to the will.
Wow. I'm not trying to scare anyone away from being an executor, but this is a serious endeavor. And I'm going to just lay this out in a very quick note here, Cecil, not only for your behalf, but on the behalf of those listening. If you are designated an executor, get legal advice. End of conversation. I would strongly recommend Harvell and Collins, but just get legal advice. All right. So the executor swears an oath and now is in charge of the estate. All right. Let's take the situation where you have the executor and other beneficiaries, and they don't agree on, as you just described, an interpretation. It strikes me that ostensibly the executor has been sort of appointed the CEO. And so eventually the CEO can make a decision and the other beneficiaries sort of have to agree to it, unless, of course, they want to take legal action. We can talk about that as well. But it strikes me that if the executor's challenged by the decisions of the beneficiaries, but has to make his or her own determination, that's the way it goes. Is that how it normally handles? Or do you, as you said earlier, you of course want to get to the core problem here. And
right.
And one of the items I can imagine is sometimes it gets a little emotional, not necessarily based on the facts and the details, but the emotional heartstrings, things of this nature. Am I thinking of how an executor really has to eventually come down on this, or is there an issue of arbitration?
Well, it is, first of all, one of the points that you made is that, you know, we are talking, you know, very serious business here.
Yeah.
And there are certainly many estates, Lockwood, I would like to say, where, you know, a lawyer does not have to be involved. We actually cannot be involved in every single estate. Some estates can be very straightforward, particularly estates, let's just be frank, between spouses. You know, a husband dies and everything is over to the wife. The house is already tenants by entirety. Most of the accounts are joint. She's the beneficiary on most everything. So, you know, we might need to talk to the wife and dot an I or cross a T, maybe update her estate planning documents potentially. But we see many files like that where it just is not necessary to be involved. Although I might add, in those files, we many times will recommend that there be an estate opened, even though things are joint. This is something that a lot of folks seem to not understand. We will still recommend that a full estate be opened because we like the benefit of running the notice to creditors and barring any creditor forever and a day from coming forward, you know, a year or 6 months or a year or 2 years later and knocking on the door of the widow and saying, by the way, your husband owed me the following amount of money. So if we don't open up an estate and we don't run the creditor's notice, then we're not going to have the benefit of that. But back on track again, Lockwood, yes, we try to resolve it. And then there are times when the executor just has to make a decision. You called it, you know, you made the comparison to like a CEO. I've been reading about all the changes in the CEO ship, if you will, down at Disney World, in the Disney Company, rather. Right. And imagine what that gentleman is having to deal with. And a lot of it will come down to him just making some good executive decisions. And the rest of us will have to live by that. And that's the case with an executor. There comes a time where, as a CEO, if you will, where you just are going to have to make the best decision you can. If it's challenged, then we'll have to deal with that. But before we make decisions like that, We usually will try to do everything we can to communicate with the beneficiaries, explain to them why the executor is taking a particular position, take a certain action on behalf of the assets of the estate, and try to resolve it if we can. And we do have pretty good track record on that, Lockwood, because a lot of times you're absolutely correct. It maybe is emotional, or it is people are concerned, others are concerned with the executor because they just don't have the full body of information. Mm-hmm. And once they are given all the information, they come by the office, they analyze the information, they see the reports, they see the appraisals, they see the information, then they become, they first of all appreciate that they've been involved, right, in the decision and are fully informed. And the emotion will begin to cool down, and we're able to come to a conclusion on that.
You know, this is, again, I acknowledge that not every estate requires heavy legal attention, but again, just a simple phone call. I strongly recommend that, 726-9050 for Harvell and Collins. That's 252 area code. Cecil, I want to now move to the issue of legal action, either in the case of a serious dispute that's not necessarily charged with malfeasance, if you will, but also the topic of an executor who is not fulfilling their responsibilities legally. We're talking with Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins today about executors and the role that an executor plays in an estate. And we'll wrap it up in a few minutes, Cecil, because sometimes I think executors say, wait a second, because of the emotional stress that we're experiencing or the challenges of time, et cetera, I need to retire. We'll talk about how that's done. But I'm more interested right now about situations where suddenly the beneficiaries are, you know, have significant disputes with the executor, and particularly in the case of malfeasance. So, Cecil, what happens in that case?
Well, we are involved, Lockwood, in any number of cases whereby certain parties, beneficiaries, are petitioning the clerk of Superior Court, if you will, which is where the case would begin, to remove the executor for breach of their fiduciary duty. Now, we take these cases very, very seriously because we know on the front end that the clerk of court and or any superior court judge is going to take the removal of an executor very, very seriously. Mm-hmm. This is not something that the clerk or a superior court judge would hasten to do. And here's the reason why. After all, Lockwood, this is the person that the testator, that the decedent, mm-hmm, appointed as their representative, as their executor.
Right.
This is who Mr. Jones thought was best. This is who Miss Sally thought would do a good job. And so when a clerk of court and or a superior court judge remove this person, then they are, in all fairness, moving, if you will, against the very terms of the last will and testament where, right, the decedent appointed this person.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, the evidence is going to have to be very strong, very clear, very convincing to the clerk of court as to why the executor is breaching their fiduciary duty. But listen, Lockwood, it absolutely happens. And we are wrapped up in several of those, probably about a half a dozen of those right now. And they are involved and time consuming, can take a lot of energy. And of course, each of the parties would be represented by different lawyers. There can be depositions in those cases. There can be discovery, just like any other litigation. There can be, there could be mediation and an attempt to resolve it. So when it moves into that litigation arena, all of the rules of litigation begin to apply, or rather the circumstances, mm-hmm, of multiple lawyers, multiple depositions, multiple sworn statements, subpoena power, of course, all of those aspects of litigation begin to apply in those files.
This becomes, and I'm going to move into the category of a criminal investigation then.
Well, I don't know that it's criminal. It's just good old solid civil litigation,
okay,
just like any lawsuit. You know,
okay.
I mean, and of course, as we know, Wes, Mr. Collins in our office handles our litigation files and his team of lawyers. But it just becomes a civil litigation file with all of the accoutrements, if you will, of civil litigation. Lockwood.
All right, this is not at that point. It's not an inexpensive undertaking because talking about a lot of time and effort.
Correct.
Where does the financial support for this come from?
Well, the beneficiaries would need to the persons who are challenging the executorship would challenge it with their own lawyers and have to pay the freight on that.
Uh-huh.
And the executor themselves would be able to defend their executorship and charge the estate accordingly until such time as they were to lose.
Uh-huh.
And if for some reason they are deemed to be unfit for office of executorship and have acted outside the scope of the fiduciary law, then, of course, it would be possible that they could be held individually liable and individually responsible for the attorney fees. So, this is full. This can become full-blown litigation, and it's most unfortunate when that happens, but it does happen.
It does happen.
You know, it's the minority. It's not, you know, something that is often in every file that we see. But we certainly, as I say, probably have about a half a dozen of them in our office right now.
All right. The other question then goes to the fact that somebody has to make a decision on this. Who makes that decision? And once the decision is made, and I'm thinking in the process of removing the current executor and replacing the executor, how do you go about that process as well?
Well, initially, the jurisdiction would rest with the clerk of Superior Court. And this, again, is sometimes a fact that our listeners don't know. Our clerk of court, and we've just finished having an election, and mm-hmm. some of the elections in certain counties were highly contested. Our case here, our election here in Carteret County with Superior Court Clerk Ken Raper was uncontested. He's out acting as a superb clerk of court right now. We have all the confidence in the world in mm-hmm. Clerk Raper, and he is doing quite a good job. But the bottom line is that in Craven County, New Hanover County, there were some very contested
wow.
elections for clerk of court. And what I'm trying to lead up to is that the clerk of court actually, with regard to estates, can act as a judge
uh-huh.
And would sit at this hearing for removal of an executor and would listen to the evidence
yeah.
and would review the documentation, the financial records, all of that, and would make a decision. Now, that decision is then appealable to the judge of the Superior Court
mm-hmm.
and is subject to appeal. So to answer your question, initially, it would be the clerk of court, and after the clerk of court, if it were appealed, it would become a superior court judge in the county where the estate is pending.
All right, let's pick on me. I've been removed by the clerk of court as the executor for the estate, and now I'm not going to contest it. I just acknowledge the fact that I've failed in some fashion. Now the clerk has to make, who makes the appointment for my replacement?
Well, that's a great question. We would follow the document, Lockwood. Remember that we are under the guidance of the last will and testament,
mm-hmm.
if you will, and or the trust agreement of the decedent. And those documents would name a fiduciary. And like any good document, they would then name an alternate. And they sometimes will even name a third alternate. So if the clerk removes the first, then we would move to, we would look at the document and we would move to the alternate in the document. But again, sometimes the alternate is not available.
Right.
Sometimes the alternate has a conflict in and of themselves. So all of this is within the good and solid discretion of the clerk of court, and that's not an easy job.
No.
Sometimes maybe we've had cases where the whole situation will just punt to the public fiduciary, the public guardian,
okay,
if you will. The family is in such a disarray and is at as in such conflict with each other that the clerk feels it best that there be some independent decision maker in the file, and will simply then at that point allow the public guardian or the public fiduciary to get involved.
What is the source for the public fiduciary? What are the qualifications?
Well, usually that is a lawyer in the county,
okay,
that the clerk feels comfortable with. It can be there sometimes is not one particular lawyer, Lockwood. There's maybe one, two, or three of mm-hmm. them that the clerk feels comfortable with. And the way to explain it is that they take on the role of public guardian.
Okay.
I mean, usually it is one particular lawyer in each county that the clerk kind of fields those cases to. But sometimes that one lawyer can get too busy, and there has to be somebody else appointed other than the lawyer that's kind of the go-to person for the clerk of court. But it's an attorney and an independent voice,
okay,
that is then appointed by the clerk to finalize the estate.
We're talking with Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins this afternoon about estate management, and we're going to wrap it up here in a moment. Cecil, and again, before I go any further, just to remind you, go to the website harvellandcollins.com. Spell out the word and, please, harvellandcollins.com, or don't hesitate to give them a call, 252 area code 726-9050, 726-9050. Cecil, obviously, we've got the situation of estate management and the procedures for either settlement of internal disputes, I'll use that description, of disagreements, and of course, situations where there has been, I'll use the term, malfeasance on the part of the executor. But then you get into a situation where an executor says, wait a second, I've got too many things on my plate, I've got to move on. How does an executor, can an executor retire, and what is the procedure for that?
Well, they can renounce, if you will, okay, resign, whatever, step aside, whatever phrase we want to use here. They, of course, would have to file a motion first.
Ooh.
With the clerk of court,
wow,
to be released. They, after all, they qualified as the executor. They qualified. They took the oath of office. They aren't just going to be able to, you know, mm-hmm, you know, walk away. They're going to have to get the permission of the court to resign, and the court at that point is going to want, it's very logical, a full accounting so that we know exactly where things are with regard to the estate. We get a full accounting, and then at that point, then the clerk can qualify the next person in line. And that does happen. The other thing that happens, Lockwood, and we talked about this some, is that, you know, we have lots of, unfortunately, we have files where folks have qualified as the executor, and then, you know, something happens to them.
Right.
They leave us. They pass on,
right,
if you will. And so there we are now. In the middle of settling an estate, and yet our executor has died.
Mm-hmm.
So we have files like that. We also have the files where you can imagine that there's an asset that's located after the estate has been closed,
mm-hmm,
say some 2 or 3 years later. We talked about this last week. We go to find this asset. It actually is existing. The estate has been closed. We need to reopen it, but when we contact the executor that handled the estate 3 or 4 years ago. They are no longer living,
right,
or they have moved away, or they cannot be located.
Wow.
And so then there we are again with the clerk of court probably getting an independent lawyer or guardian to act on behalf of the estate to get that asset settled.
You know, Cecil, as we wrap it up, the conclusion I'm coming to after listening to all of these programs is that from the perspective of the individual who's writing the will, a little effort in advance can go a long way to solving problems before they become problems. You know, just clearing up a whole plethora of issues that could just go away with a simple visit and communications with an attorney. I know this comes all the way back to the very beginning, but it really is. If you will just simply sit down, you know, create a will, and go through all the steps that we have talked about avoiding, then it would be a lot simpler and benefit the beneficiaries. Final conclusion on that? Am I accurate?
Well, absolutely. In making out these documents, the last will and testament or any trust agreement, what is so important, Lockwood, are the contingencies.
Uh-huh.
And the clarity in the language, particularly if there's any kind of special want. I mean, it's easy to say rest, residue, and remainder of my estate, a third, a third, a third.
Right.
Fine. Okay. But what if the person is wanting a particular property to be appraised,
mm-hmm,
and go to a particular beneficiary, or the business is to go to my eldest son, but there's to be an offset amongst my two younger daughters? I mean, if there's any wrinkle, I don't know that I'd call that a wrinkle, but any special request that you have in your family, then that can be where the issues are. If for some reason the language is not clear,
clarify the language. Work with an attorney. Get your estate settled early or established early. Get a good will. We're talking with Harvell and Collins, Cecil Harvell, today, and I'll just leave it at that. As a matter of fact, Cecil, I would say a great end-of-year event, and we'll talk about this maybe in the future, as well as a great Christmas gift for the families. Get that will established. Get it taken care of. Give Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins a call. Harvell and Collins, 252 area code 726-9050, or go online to harvellandcollins.com. And with that, Cecil, thank you very much, and talk to you next week.